Welcome to the Mindset for Life podcast. This is Bethany, your coach from drbcoach.com, coaching with power, purpose, and practical tools to help you show up with confidence. Hello there, and thank you for joining me for today's podcast. I'd like to talk about overcoming negativity and negative thinking. Until I was in my middle adult years, I didn't even know that negativity was a cognitive distortion or what we say, like a filter or a bias that actually could be worked on. I've always considered myself a fairly positive person, but even though that's the case, I've had a lot of people in my life who are inherently negative, or a person who is negative argues that they're being realistic, whereas a person who is optimistic often seems as if they're missing key points of a situation or an argument or whatever. So it's important to know that a balanced perspective includes both positive and negative options, positivity and negativity, optimism and realism. So balance is healthy, and balance can help us to see the world better, understand other people better, and experience life just in a better way because we have a lot more to think about and more options. Anything that increases the options in our thinking is a good thing. And things that narrow options so that we feel trapped, closed off, or unable to consider anything else, that is something that we want to resist. resist resistance, basically. So negativity is one of those things. And today I want to talk a little bit about that. So I'm going to talk first about individual approaches. So what one can do to really change our own negative thinking. And then secondly, I'm going to talk about a business strategy from the business world, which is really about negotiating with another person. It doesn't mean that we're there to correct them, change them, heal them, anything like that, but at least to get a mutually beneficial outcome or determine our point where maybe we end the engagement or pursue an alternative or something like that. Here it is, the beginning of individual negativity adjustment. One of the first things that a person can do to reduce negativity, or at least identify it, is to think about what it is we're over-focusing on. Sometimes an issue is so big that it feels overwhelming. But when things are not very big, when they are negative and they're really impacting us, but we might be able to get beyond them through our natural abilities and skills, one thing we can do is to employ humor, to roll with things, or to understand that there may just be more to the situation than we realize. Reframing is another strategy, which is to look at the situation in a different way than what you're used to or what is obvious. For example, if something feels really negative or we're thinking in a negative way about it, we might take the perspective of someone else. What would a reasonable person think in this situation? What would another person who has no options think? What would a person with many choices think? Considering different kinds of options really can help us to see things in a new light, and that is called reframing. It can be a really helpful tool for us. Sometimes we get stuck in one particular view, and it's very difficult to see our way out. If we decide that this view is like a major setback, and there's just nothing good that can come out of it, it can be very difficult to see anything else. And someone may come to us and say, well, look on the bright side. This is a thing that could happen. For example, I know someone recently who lost their job. Something happened at work and they're no longer working there anymore. And it wasn't necessarily their choice. That person was incredibly upset at first and really interested in kind of getting stuck in that negative feeling of not having a job. And of course, all of us who want to earn money and need to earn money would love to have a job. The interesting thing is, after a few days, the same person was able to see, wow, you know, I wasn't able to go do these family things and some of the interesting hobbies that I have while I was working that job because it really consumed me. I didn't have any extra time. And now that I'm not working, I can see that there are some things in my life I'd like to do. and I saw that person relax and become a little more cheerful. And that is the idea of viewing a setback as an opportunity and looking for what more could come of it. And when we think of things from that perspective of like, what opportunity does this present? That can suddenly give us options that maybe we didn't think of before. And when we're in that more relaxed space, thinking of options rather than roadblocks, more possibilities emerge. It's possible for us to find new possibilities for the next job, for example. When we are thinking from an open place, from a relaxed state, and that's where creativity comes from as well. So when we're overcoming negative thinking in our own lives, opening the door to opportunity, possibility, and creativity is the goal. That is a critical goal to pursue. Now, there's another idea that we can have some distorted thoughts that really are severe, and it's very normal for people to have one or more types of distorted thoughts. Like if something is negative, it's always going to be that way. It is just the way it is, or something similar to that. Or if one small thing happens, everything is suddenly wrong. If we start to think in a place of cognitive distortion and we get really stuck and we're not able to find our way out, it's a really great thing to speak with a friend to get some perspective, to find a life coach who can ask questions and help us find alternatives or other perspectives, to find a therapist or psychologist who can help us get out of that stuck place. There are many, many options we have to talk with other people and get more input to remove that being stuck. I've known people who were stuck for years and years who, once having that conversation and bringing something out into the light, felt very differently. So pessimism, depression, negativity, these all can spiral together and get deeper and deeper and become really rigid thinking, and start to develop other serious negative emotions. So be on your guard for those things. And when it starts to feel overwhelmingly stuck, where there's just no hope, definitely reach out to others who can help you out of those things and help you to find healing and hope and a new path forward. A lot of the inflexible thinking I've mentioned, called cognitive distortions, these can be summarized in a couple of ways. Actually, I could list these. One is all or nothing thinking. Have you ever thought that if you didn't succeed in each thing that you took on, that you'd just be a failure? Or have you ever thought that you just weren't worth anything, maybe to a family member or employer, because you made a major mistake? All or nothing thinking takes us to that place, and it's definitely a cognitive distortion. Even a big mistake can be fixed or dealt with or at least moved beyond. Rigid thinking is one of those ways of thinking where it just kind of permeates everything. We don't feel like we can be happy because we feel guilty about being happy when we're stuck in the negative thinking about all or nothing mentality. But life is full of many happy things, many unhappy things, many positives and many negatives. And I've always been a real proponent of moderation in everything in life. Although I'd love to have more happiness than sadness, it isn't really realistic to believe that all of life can be happy. In fact, life can probably be happy only about half the time. And if that's true, we're bound to experience negativity, sadness, disappointment, and failure a lot of the time as well. So another type of cognitive distortion would be if it's a mistake that it becomes who I am, over-identifying with a single issue. So even if we're not struggling with negativity, it's really good to have strategies in place to help ourselves out of it in the future, to kind of have a good conversation with others and encourage them on these different viewpoints if they're interested in that, and think beyond the current situation. So another thing that will help us individually get out of negativity, many times we need to think about the future, plan for the future, resolve issues in the past, But living in the present can really help bring things down to reality. For example, the person I mentioned before who had lost their job, when thinking about the present moment, it's a lot easier to tackle the negative feelings than it is when we think about all the time in the future. That person may have bills to pay, things they were expecting to do in that job, growth they wanted to experience there. Just letting go of all those thoughts for a little bit and thinking about the present moment, then that individual would be able to see, right now, what are my immediate needs? Do I have any bills coming due today? Debts right now? Are there any ways I can get assistance or I can negotiate with those debtors or things I can work on? What space do I have right now to solve the immediate issues? And then that person also would be able to feel a little bit more in control for the future questions that come up because there's a separation between the event and the current needs and the bigger picture of one's life. This brings in a really nice sense of control, which we all have. Of course, things beyond our control happen, like the loss of the job. But even when faced with something beyond our control that we really don't like and didn't want or didn't expect, we always have options right now for ourselves. We have things we can choose, things we can control. And when we start thinking about bringing it to the present, that gives us the space to think about what we can control right now. So reframing was one I mentioned, using humor and also thinking about the present moment. I'm going to leave you with these three strategies in terms of calming your own negative thinking, one's individual negative thinking. And now I'd like to shift to this idea that I mentioned about business and a strategy that has come from this book, Conscious Business by Fred Kaufman. I really like this strategy. He shares in a section about negotiating. So he has several things in here that are real gems. But the one that I'd like to bring out is the protocol for having a negotiation type of conversation. Sometimes we're dealing with another person who's very negative or who wants something we don't want, or in some way is resisting what we'd like to do. In relationships, this can be particularly difficult because we really want to get along with that other person, or we want to deal with that situation so that it just is handled and everything is great. But if we decide to just go along with what the other person wants, but our heart is deeply invested in something else, it will result in us having a little bit of resentment underneath all that, and possibly cause great harm to our relationship with that person from our side of the fence. And we're bringing it along because we choose to subvert what we really want and not talk about it. Talking about it is essential. Sometimes we will find that there are people who don't want to talk about things with us. But when we have a strategy and we face a difficult person, we can at least try to get through a conversation with that person and keep everything really organized and clear. And this has the potential to reduce all the emotional escalation that happens when two people have differing opinions or differing desires. I'm going to share this strategy with you, and I hope you'll take notes on it because it's a gem. It's just a beautiful thing. The first thing is to do your homework before you get to the conversation. And let's just say it's about a vacation. And perhaps it's a husband and wife, and maybe the wife would like to go camping in the forest with a trailer and really have a nice, bring the kitchen along kind of experience because, you know, she wants to bring the trailer and the camp trailer. And maybe the husband wants to camp in a tent so that he can take his fishing boat because what matters when he goes camping much more than anything is being on the lake and kind of floating along and catching lots and lots of fish. So we have these competing priorities of bringing the kitchen sink and bringing the fishing boat. So in the conversation, each person would need to be coming to that conversation doing their homework, but the person who sets up that conversation for sure needs to think about What do they really want deep down? What is the bigger goal? Is it to have the kitchen sink or the boat? Or is it to have the time in nature with each other? Is it to cook nice meals? Is it to have luxury when you're in the wilderness? Is it to be together? Is it to get away from civilization? And we want to keep asking the what. What is your reason behind this? What is it that you really want? And we can ask that to ourselves without even being in that conversation, and ask it many, many times till we get to the real deep core of that, which is we want oneness in marriage. We want these recreational opportunities to really do something together. Then once we get to that place of what do we both want that's in common, then we have somewhere to go. We can discuss all the different options and why each person wants it and how maybe we can come up with a third option that incorporates two different things. Maybe we could get the boat and the RV up there to the camp spot together. Maybe there's a way to do that. So there's a lot that can be done when one does their homework. And here's the structure that Fred Kaufman recommends for the actual conversation. The first thing is to speak with the other person and ask if they'd be willing to use a structure or like an outline for this conversation. Do you want to talk about that before the conversation begins so that emotions don't flare and derail the success of this conversation? The first thing would be to lay out, well, here's what we think the conversation will go like. One person is going to share their perspective and explain what they want and what they think, and the other person is going to be listening. And that person is going to be listening, and the entire intention behind it will be to understand. So the goal is to be able to understand and fully clarify what the first person is saying. And that could happen in terms of questions. And my personal recommendation is that asking what questions can be particularly effective. But the first person has the floor, and they really provide clarification of their ideas, their thoughts. They present their side, they explain, they attempt to explore their side constructively, and they really give their viewpoint. The second person listens, asks the questions, what this, what that. They otherwise need to keep quiet so that they're not formulating a response or a rebuttal. They're open-mindedly listening to that first person, which can be difficult if this has been a tense conflict in the past. But listening for the facts, the feelings, the whole side of that first person. And once the second person has had a chance to ask clarifying questions, then what their next job is to summarize back to that first person their understanding without judgment. And this is where I think a lot of folks get into trouble, is we want to insert adjectives that sort of describe our perception of that plan. And we're already starting to express our side when we do that. So just summarizing unemotionally what the first person has said in the most concise way, without judgment, without blame, without colored terms, can really help that first person fully get out all that they need to say, be heard, understood, and in that way feel acknowledged and validated without an argument. And once this is done, the first person would then approve or add details to the second person's summary of what they said. Yes, you're right. That's exactly what I meant. Or no, I'd like to add this detail or that detail. And then the final summary of that first person's comments would be closed. Now we're going to switch, and the second person gets a chance to express their ideas, concerns, needs, wants, whatever it is that they'd like to say from their vantage point and what they like to achieve. So in the case of the husband and wife going on a camping vacation, you know, maybe we first let the wife was talking about her camp trailer desires, and she explains why and what she wants and all these things. And they've gone back and forth, and the husband has repeated, from what you've said, I understand you want this for this reason, and these are your concerns. Yes. Okay. So now it's time for the second person. So the husband is going to explain his reasons for wanting to take the fishing boat and what he'd like to achieve on the trip, what he really dreams about, loves about the camping trip, and his concerns about bringing both or the trailer or whatever. And he's going to give his entire side while the first person is listening without interruption, with an open mind and completely trying to understand the second person's viewpoint. And when that second person is talking, maybe new details will come to light. Maybe they won't. But either way, that second person is going to be able to speak, fully get it all out there. And now it's one's chance to ask questions, make sure they clarify and understand fully what the second person has said. And I'd like to add here that many times in a conversation, we assume we understand what somebody means. Maybe they'll make a statement and we'll interpret it a certain way, so we think that we understand it. This is a good time to ask those questions. What did you mean when you said this? What did you mean when you said that? When you say you really want this, what exactly does that include? All of those kinds of questions are really critical to fleshing out a person's ideas. Until we say them to someone else, it's often very unclear what we ourselves think about it. We kind of mull it over on the inside of our brain, but when it comes out our mouth and we hear ourselves say it, we understand it differently too. So it's really important to get all that stuff out. And then the first person's going to summarize back to the second what that second person said. At this point, both parties have had a chance to explore each other's ideas, express themselves fully, and this is where the dialogue can begin. So once everybody's satisfied with the other person's summary and they start to feel like they've been heard, they've been understood, this is where the two people can discuss back and forth and ask questions, answer questions, and continue to mutually learn about each other's ideas. At this point, we might even be exploring options for how either both ideas can be achieved, or maybe they can be morphed into a third option, a new idea that both people could agree on. Asking those what is most important about that questions, other people refer to this as the five whys. Like, why do you want that? What is it you want to achieve? Why is that important to you? What do you really want? Those kind of questions help dig underneath to the real feelings, the real thoughts, the bigger picture. And ultimately, a lot of times people can come to a solid agreement here. And the next part of this would be to explore those options and decide what the final is going to be. So there needs to be some kind of consensus in the end of the conversation. The key to brainstorming, remember, is that every idea is excellent and valuable. No one is allowed to judge, criticize, blame, have an emotional explosion in the middle of that conversation. That could be a really good goal to set at the very beginning of that conversation. Is remember, this is going to be a healthy dialogue back and forth where we each need to control our emotions and keep those in check. And if you have an idea, find a way to express it in a healthy way that helps both of us. So we're going to negotiate this a little bit. We're going to go back and forth and brainstorm possibilities. We're going to negotiate it a little. And in the end, we do have to decide. And in any situation, whether it's the classroom, the business, the boardroom, the family, the living room, any negotiation, there is ultimately a clean way to decide if no agreement can be reached. If we have to, in the end, have one person decide, there is usually a key decision maker who could be the person that makes that final decision. Sometimes it's a manager or a boss. Sometimes if it's a disagreement between two people, it's whoever their authority is. Maybe they decide in advance. If we cannot come to an agreement, how will we decide? You could go to arbitration. You could go to drawing straws. If it's at home and you don't have someone that is the more senior person or the more superior person, there are so many strategies. You could take turns being the decider. You could vote if it's the whole family. You could say, this time it's going to be dad's decision. This time it's going to be mom's decision. There are just a lot of options there that could be decided on ahead of time or up front when you start the decision-making part. So deciding really helps. A lot of negativity that we feel from other people is their resistance to our ideas because we're pushing our ideas or we're resisting their ideas, and they just don't feel heard and they don't think they have any other choice. So we may feel a lot of negativity or resistance from others because they perceive themselves as having no options. Once we open up that dialogue and really get down to all the details, explore the thoughts and feelings, and take turns going back and forth, much of the negativity will dissipate. It'll totally fade away because we've been able to see the other person as a human being. We've been able to negotiate on a real human level and feel heard ourselves, and we can let go of the battle. Many times the battle is over something fairly small, and we can see the bigger picture and really have a better outcome. So today we've explored this idea of negativity in ourselves, negative bias, and also negotiating with another person, which often it has a lot of negativity attached to it. I hope these tools will be helpful for you. In the end, we're thinking about our mindset, what kind of thinking we'd like to have to become the best version of ourselves. And whenever we're identifying things that are roadblocks to having our mind work the way we want it to, getting along with other people, hearing others, being able to feel confident about decisions we make and feeling better, feeling more positive than negative. Anytime we can identify these things and work these strategies into our lives, our mindset's going to keep opening up and we're going to be able to think in new ways that give us the fuel to become that better version of ourselves. I wish you all the best this week in becoming the best version of you. This has been a podcast called Mindset for Life by Bethany at drbcoach.com. To find me on the web, you can visit my blog or my website at www.drbcoach.com. That's drbcoach.com.